everybody. Welcome to the NFL Roadshow post-trade edition. Just a monster day of action on Friday that we've now had a few days to marinate on. Think about the moves, what they mean. And I'll have a couple of people close to two of the teams on to tell us what they've come up with. Safed Dean, who covers the Dolphins for the Sun Sentinel, and Cam Inman, who covers the Niners for the Bay Area News Group. Quick recap of the moves. It'll only take a second if you're like, duh, yeah, I know. We've now got the Niners picking third in the draft, moved up from 12, gave up a ton, right? A first rounder next year and a first rounder in 2023, also a third rounder this year. All of that headed to Miami, which then turned around and sent one of their now two first rounders for next year to Philadelphia to move back up from 12 to 6. So we've got San Francisco at 3. Without a first-round pick next year or the year after that, they're all in. We've got the Dolphins at 6 with an extra first-rounder in 2023 and an extra third-rounder this year. And we've got the Eagles now at 12 with an extra first-rounder next year and also an earlier pick this year. They also moved up a few spots from the 5th to the 4th round in that deal with the Dolphins. But the big story there is the extra first, which sets them up really nicely to go get a quarterback next year if Jalen Hurts doesn't work out this year. And they're still positioned nicely to put pieces around him this year in the hopes that it will work out with 4 picks in the top 84. So I love the moves for Miami. Slow clap for Chris Greer, or fast clap with all sorts of excitement, all of the things. Didn't make any sense at all to sit at 3, right? Unless they wanted a quarterback, and that didn't make any sense either since they used a top pick on a quarterback last year. So to use the quarterback neediness of other teams to their advantage and still end up in a spot where they could end up getting the exact guy that they would have taken at 3 while also netting an extra 1 and a 3, that is a massive win. And even if the board doesn't go the way that I think it will, quarterback, 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 offensive lineman to Cincy, even if Atlanta grabs a playmaker at 4 or Cincinnati does, which would be a very big mistake in my estimation because Joe Burrow, God, please protect that man up front. But anyway, even if those things happen, Miami would still get a legit playmaker at 6. And that's pretty much all they need to happen. San Francisco, though, I don't know. I don't know what to make of the move for them. I love that they did it. As an unbiased observer who loves the drama that it kicks up, the breadcrumbs that it lays down for people like me to follow for the next month, will it be a good move for them, though? I don't know. It's a lot to give up for a quarterback that we can't even agree on right now as being the best option for them. I mean, it would be one thing if we were all like, oh my gosh, Trey Lance, perfect fit. Or Mac Jones, right? Tons of people are saying that he's a great fit, but they're also saying he's not worth a 3rd overall pick. Or 3 ones, for that matter. Because that is ultimately what San Francisco is going to spend on the quarterback that they draft at 3. 3 first round picks. It's bonkers. So that's where Cam Inman comes in. He's covered this team for 2 decades now. I think this is his 21st season covering the team, and he's here to help me figure it all out. So let's break the huddle. Cam, so very interesting press conference Monday in Santa Clara. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch confirming that it will be a quarterback at number 3 for those of us that hadn't figured that out on our own. It's always nice to have that kind of confirmation, right?
Absolutely. You know, it's like we don't have to speculate for a month about offensive tackles and right. tight ends and shaking things up. And I mean, there's still a little bit of a thing we can play with and say, are they going to trade up to 2 with the Jets? But ooh. I mean, they've played it up pretty good that they're going to get a hotshot quarterback to be an apprentice to Jimmy Garoppolo. And that's their story. And they're sticking to it until they have to change it.
So I think you were joking there about the Jets in number 2. That is not something they could actually do anymore, right?
They can do anything, but I don't think they're going to. It's sad, you know, and I asked John Lynch about just, you know, how sure they were of what was going to happen at 1 and 2. And he went so far as to say, well, Urban Meyer, you know, has been seen with Trevor Lawrence at Clemson and the Jets
kind of confirmed it to Peter King.
Pretty much. And then he said that the Jets have been pretty forthright, which means I think
no thank you, we want Zach.
by showing up in BYU with their coach and GM when the 49ers only sent John Lynch and left Kyle Shanahan at home. I mean, personally, I would love to see Zach Wilson play for the 49ers. I mean, all Niner fans have this image of the last time they won a Super Bowl was with a BYU quarterback named Steve Young. And there's
it's the BYU thing. Forget about who cares about the quarterback as long as they came from BYU.
Unless one of Joe Montana's kids wants to come back and play some more football. Yes, that's what they would have to settle with. So, I mean, there's three or four quarterbacks on the board that Kyle Shanahan has fallen in love with. And the 49ers are going to get one. And
Do you believe that? Do you believe that there's that they have to know which one? They have to, Cam. They're going to spend three first round picks on a quarterback. It can't just be whichever quarterback falls to us is fine. You don't use up all that draft capital unless you love somebody, right?
I agree. And I think honestly, as much as we may think we know stuff in the media and everybody likes to be an expert, I think we probably know 10% of what, I think these guys know exactly what everybody's doing.
Yes.
And I think Kyle Shanahan knows that the guy he wants will be there at number three, and it's not the guy that the Jets want. So this to me, though, this is really, this is Kyle Shanahan's deal. This is three of the four seasons he's been the 49er coach have been obliterated because of quarterback injuries or inefficiency. And it's been an accepted excuse. The ownership has backed every request he's had, and this is his biggest ask. And I think it's one that everybody can understand. And the fact that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan got contract extensions a year ago, it affords them a couple more years to play this game of bringing in a new quarterback. But the fact that they don't have to abandon Jimmy Garoppolo, I think that speaks well, not only for Jimmy, but his presence in the locker room, in that everybody still has Jimmy Garoppolo's, I mean, their slogan is, "We've got your back." I mean, do they want to say, "We've got your back until you sprain an ankle in week two and you're done"? So they still have Jimmy Garoppolo there to kind of steer the ship until he gets hurt, or if this rookie comes in and just is phenomenal. But the problem with that, Lindsay, is there's probably not going to be an off-season program to show that on the field. And to show up in late July for a cram session, that's asking so much for a team that's built to win now rather than in 2 years.
Do you think, and we'll get back to Jimmy Garoppolo in just a minute, but I'd like to try and figure out who this quarterback is that they love so much, right? And that's obviously going to be the game that we're all going to play for the next month here. But it feels like there are three guys, assuming that one and two are locked in at Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. So we're looking at either Trey Lance or Justin Fields or Mac Jones.
Yes.
Do you have any opinion about whether any of those make sense or don't make sense?
Yes, I think all three of them make sense, Lindsay. And I have not thrown my support behind any candidate necessarily. Although, I mean, you could pick and choose about every single one, which is going to make the next month somewhat fun. I mean, we can, there's going to be so much overthinking this. And I want to start with Justin Fields because this Ohio State quarterback has played in some big games, obviously. He played very well against Clemson. And he has a Kyle Shanahan connection, having been coached by Kyle 4 years ago at a high school clinic in Thousand Oaks, the QB Collective. And, you know, Kyle can downplay it as, it's the only time I done it. It was really kind of a cool experience, and I'm sure it was. But guess what? That means he knows about Justin Fields, and he's seen Justin Fields on the big stage. And Justin Fields has a big arm, and he can run fast. And Kyle Shanahan, as much as everybody thinks he just wants a pocket passer who's stoic back there, he wants somebody that's that can run and can be mobile. Which brings us to Trey Lance.
Is that a new thing? That is he adapting as a coach in terms of what he's looking for?
I think it's two things. One, yes, he's adapting. But I mean, remember, he had RG3, so he's had a quarterback that can run. It's also just,
but he didn't want him, supposedly.
No, but he liked Kirk Cousins too, right? And Kirk Cousins isn't a zone read runner. From what I hear, he does want a running quarterback. He just wants it. I mean, look at his offense. He just loves to have versatility and motion and just ways to deceive people. And if you can add an extra element at quarterback, it's great. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo is not that, but at the same time, Jimmy has this quick release and just has the poise in the pocket that he'd like. If he had better protection, that would help him too. But then on to Trey Lance, this kid from North Dakota State that we haven't seen much of. He's a 6'4 kid with extreme speed. He's got a big arm. My next door neighbor, Dave, went to North Dakota State and says he'd be great. So he has that going for him.
I love the level of scouting you're doing here.
I mean, yeah, let's leave the X's and O's to Daniel Jeremiah and everybody. But me, I just look for, but hey, you've seen this guy all the time. As an alum, do you vouch for him? Absolutely. Kyle briefly talked about one or two of these guys, and he said he would love to have seen more of Trey Lance. He would have loved to see more of Zach Wilson if the pandemic hadn't robbed everybody of some games. He'd also would have loved to be able to dine everybody and have each of them work out for him. So I think he leaves open the window that there is some speculation and work to do on this. I mean, he did it with a great poker face. So I don't necessarily buy it either.
What about Mac Jones? Because that's the one that like Michael Lombardi, there are some people that are going all in on like Chris Sims, obviously, who has a relationship with Kyle Shanahan, who Kyle Shanahan says knows nothing about what his pick is going to be. So don't read into his analysis. But there are a lot of people who know Kyle Shanahan or just, you know, the NFL well, that say that Mac Jones makes the most sense for him. So they're convinced, although they say also that it doesn't make any sense to move up that high to go get Mac Jones because they might have been able to get him a lot lower. I don't know.
Well, I'll say this on that front of whether they moved up too high to get him. The reason they moved up was because they saw the quarterback market. They saw what teams needed a quarterback. And if they identified him as their guy, I have no problem with them going up to three to get him. Yeah. If he, either way, your legacy and your tenure with the 49ers is going to be rooted with whichever quarterback you're taking. If he's your guy, get him at three. Is he the guy? I don't know. You know who knows, Lindsay? Is Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
Probably John Lynch. Probably Jed and John York. And then maybe Mike Shanahan. And that is it. Everybody else that says, oh, the whispers are, it's all Mac Jones. That's great. Everybody right. in the NFL talks. But yeah. Not everybody knows what they're going to do. And there's too much of a competition to try to say, oh, I know what's going to happen, right? I mean, guess what? In 2018, I was like one of the few people that said Mike McGlinchey is going to be the 49ers first round pick. What did that do for me? It doesn't mean anything, yeah. right? Nobody had them necessarily getting Brandon Ayuk as their wide receiver in the first round last year when they could have had CeeDee Lamb, right? They could have had Jerry Jeudy. Those guys were on the board. We all said, they're going to get him. No, they're going to get DeForest Buckner's replaced. So that's part of the beauty of the draft is we all can pretend we're experts. And when we're not, or even if we are, people forget about it because you moved on to, hey, what's next? So if Mac Jones is the pick and he becomes exactly what Kyle Shanahan wants, because he's kind of similar to Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't know enough about Mac Jones to say that he's good or bad. I think a lot of people can say that and they have their own judgments about him. I've seen him play. He's on a winning team. He had a tremendous supporting cast. Well, guess what? When he goes to the pros and if he comes to the 49ers, he's going to have a tremendous supporting cast.
And a coach that will put him in great situations, all of the above. You're totally right. So that knock against him, if we don't really know how good he is because he was on a good team, well, I mean, he's going to Kyle Shanahan if this is the scenario as it plays out. I think he'll be okay.
So here's my question to you is, do we overvalue Kyle Shanahan? I've covered the 49ers for 20 years or 21 years. And I'm fully confident in him as a head coach. I think he's a great head coach. I think how he relates to the players, how he controls games, how he can scheme up plays, obviously, that's his bread and butter. Is he snake bit in Super Bowls? That's something that people may have to come to terms with if it gets sketchy again.
That's a problem 49ers fans would love to figure out. Let's get to a Super Bowl and then we'll figure out if he has issues in the biggest game. Yes.
But you know what he has going for him best is he has the ownership support. And the York family ownership, since they took control about 20 years ago, there was questions whether they would, you know, whether they were all in this in terms, like, do they have too much of a quick trigger? They went through a lot of different coaches there, from Harbaugh to Tom Sula to Chip Kelly to now to Shanahan. But in all these 4 years, they've really created a harmonious work environment that I haven't seen on the 49ers. And that is why these guys have great job security and why they can make a big move like this. And Kyle has gotten from what we've seen, Kyle's gotten everything he's wanted from whether it's the 6-year contract that he came with, whether it's handpicking John Lynch, whether it's every year they have awarded a record-setting deal to somebody, whether it's a fullback, whether it was Garoppolo in 2018, 2019, you saw George Kittle get his deal. You saw Trent Williams get paid this year. So they have like this 6th Lombardi trophy on layover that they keep paying towards, and they finally want to get it. And maybe this first round draft pick is what's finally going to put him over the top in the next year or two.
I mean, but to go back to your question about whether we overvalue him, this last season's a tough one, right? Like I think most of us are willing to give them a pass on this last season because of the sheer number of injuries that they were hit with in a pandemic season. I mean, it was a total anomaly, and nobody gets through that. So, what I think is so impressive is how he does figure out ways to use people. And he's so consistently been in the mix, and he's creative. And I think we love that. And I think that there was a year there where people were asking that same question about Sean McVay, right? Did we overreact to him? Did we give him the genius label too soon? And then, you know, there he is. He's right back at it. And now they're making moves to fill what I think a lot of us thought was a hole that they had on offense at the quarterback position. So I love what Kyle Shanahan has done so far in the NFL. And I think that he's earned the long leash, I guess, that ownership has given with him up there. And I think that's the best way to build a really good team that can be good for a long time, is when everybody's on the same page and really respects one another. And it feels like that's what they have up there. And not only, like, in the first couple of years, they didn't hit on all of the early round draft picks. Yeah. You know, Solomon Thomas is the first person I thought of, actually, when you were talking about Justin Fields and his backstory, his history with Kyle Shanahan. Because I was thinking, well, the Niners actually don't have a great track record when it comes to picking guys that you have like this, you know, history with. But they also, I was looking at some of their late round draft picks. Like the guys that they brought in as undrafted free agents, they've crushed it. Yeah. They've made really good moves.
Well, two things on that. First, Solomon Thomas had a business class with John Lynch, right, at Stanford. So there's that connection.
Yeah.
And it was just, that was just a terrible pick. He didn't fit that scheme or whatever. And he's a really wonderful guy, and I wish him well with the Raiders. But then you do look at their other hits that they've had with George Kittle as a fifth
round.
You had Fred Warner 3 years ago was an all-pro. Or 3 years ago, he was a third rounder. Now he's an all-pro that all the college volume backers are coming out saying, he's a guy I look up to. It's like, what? Wow, how did this escalate so fast? And then the system, especially the run-oriented system, the outside zone, it just benefits running back so well if they're fast and can read plays so well. And that's why you see Raheem Mostert go from a special teams ace to a superstar. And Jeff Wilson Jr., one of your undrafted rookies that they snagged. So, but that's kind of the beauty of the NFL. Like, you know, in past years, gosh, when they went to the Super Bowls, but in 2012, like they had like 20 guys that were undrafted free agents, like undrafted into the league that were on their roster. And it's just cool that it just shows in the NFL, you don't have to be drafted. You just have to get an opportunity and be in the right spot at the right time and really put in the work, and you might get rewarded with it.
And the right spot at the right time is so huge. And I think that's one of the things that I give to Shanahan. Like, you know, when they traded Breida, I remember thinking, they didn't get enough for Breida. Well, it turns out that maybe Breida was good in that specific system, you know, that they might have made Breida even look better. Well, certainly than he did elsewhere, right? Like, so I want to go back to one of the things that he said, again, back to the tea leaf reading, in the press conference, that I thought was very interesting, because, of course, Kyle Shanahan was asked about the fact that he didn't go to a lot of pro days this year, doesn't show up at all of them, and hadn't gone to Trey Lance's pro day, and, you know, hadn't been making appearances on the circuit, but he was going to go to Tuscaloosa to watch Mac Jones. And he said that he'd grown up, and the idea that you don't want to go everywhere and show people things, essentially, like, I'm going to keep my cards close to my vest and I don't want to tip off people about what I'm interested in by my mere presence. But now that he's number three, quote, you don't have to hide as much. So I thought that was a very interesting comment. You could read that into, like, now we're free to look at quarterbacks. But yeah. I think it's more specific than that. Tell me if you disagree, because we see people go to all of the quarterback pro days all the time. Like, why would he not be allowed to be seen at Trey Lance's pro day? Everybody knows that they're at least open to the idea of a quarterback this offseason. You could go look at Trey Lance and not have anybody know that that means that you might be willing to move up to number three to go get him or anything. I don't understand that. So I do think that there is something to be said for the fact that he's going to go to this pro day in Tuscaloosa to watch Mac Jones. Tell me why I'm wrong.
I would say you're wrong, but you're not wrong. But there, I would say the devil's advocate is, and he even pointed this out, is he gets to go there instead of Ohio State because Justin Fields is going to work out separately for him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, is Mac Jones going to work out separately for him, or is Kyle just going to go there? Because Alabama has a lot of good players and the Niners have eight other draft picks to use.
But, okay, but if you know who you're going to get at number three, yeah, and you feel like you don't have to hide anymore,
right,
then why are you going to watch anyone that is not your number three overall pick quarterback that you're madly in love with that you're going to spend three first-round picks on? Why still smokescreen us?
Maybe because he wants to get out of the house because we've all been trapped in a pandemic for a year.
I feel that, Cam. I feel that right? So deeply.
You know what, though? Kyle is a guy, and this is how he said it over the years. He studies so much film. He's the eye in the sky, doesn't lie guy, right? Mm-hmm. He loves to, like, turn on his Lil Wayne music and sit and watch game film.
Is that what he listens to? Of guys. When he's...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He named his son Carter. So, I mean, yes, it's he's totally into it. I mean, and so that's why, I mean, he's identified probably the guy that he wants, and why he's going on this to get out of, I don't know if I would pick Alabama. I used to have relatives there, so I don't, not knocking the state, but I mean, that they have a great program, a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm.
It is a specific trip, but guess what? Maybe they're going to see Mac Jones. Maybe they're going to see Trey Lance the next day. I mean, that's, you're going east, right? Maybe that's kind of a, oh, we can hit him first and then we go up to see Trey Lance. Maybe we go see Justin Fields. Maybe if they're doing a little circuit, maybe we should find out the John York, Jed York charter flight under whatever, how we track airplanes and see where they go next.
Maybe he's going to meet with Bill Belichick.
I don't think they have to meet. They have a direct line going back to 2017 when they sent Jimmy his way already. I tell you, you know, I spent all offseason saying Jimmy Garoppolo is their quarterback going into this year. And not necessarily because of, not that I was taking them for their word, because that's what they've maintained. I just said, read the room. Is there a better option out there to come in to lead this team? If the Green Bay Packers wanted to part with Aaron Rodgers to bring him home to Northern California to rectify the 2005 mistake, sure.
Yes.
Matthew Stafford, I wasn't totally sold on. But you know, that was a possibility. But, and then Deshaun Watson was in the running for a little while before everything went haywire in his world. And so the rookie that comes in, and everything we heard, Lindsay, with what Kyle and John said at this press conference, was in no way to dispel the notion that they want this rookie to come in and learn behind Garoppolo. They don't want to thrust him in, trial by fire on a playoff contending team with no offseason workouts.
And I mean, that obviously makes a ton of sense under the circumstances. Yeah. There is the possibility that people will raise that is also a smokescreen to get whatever price up for Jimmy Garoppolo. You don't believe that to be the case, though.
Then who is the backup quarterback that you're going to entrust that roster to? Because
with a good roster, because that's another point that he kept making, is that they were able to keep a lot of their free agents home in a way that he didn't necessarily anticipate. So he thinks that they have a team where they can go win it. I don't disagree. Why would you roll out a very inexperienced quarterback and throw
your options to back up this rookie is right now it's Josh Johnson and Josh Rosen. And neither one has taken a snap in your offense. Mm-mm. So you can't trust that. I mean, they brought in Joe Flacco last week for Elixir, and then Joe went to Philly, and Flacco had some experience in the system back in Denver, but it was never something serious. So I think this is what they're going to do. They're going to go 1-2 here. I mean, if they went with a rookie and maybe Flacco because of his experience, maybe, but not now.
No. Okay. That makes sense. Playing that out, if Garoppolo got them to a Super Bowl, if they won the Super Bowl with him, then what? Do they then trade Garoppolo at the height of his trade powers? How does that go?
That's fascinating, because the way they painted it today was a 1-year deal. Like Jimmy, like they pretty much outright said he's a lame duck quarterback this year.
Yeah.
And my follow-up question was, well, what kind of pushback does Jimmy have on this? Because Jimmy's been absolutely silent all offseason. His agents have been silent. Okay. Jimmy's not the kind of quarterback that he, at least from what I've seen in 4 years, where he's going to be demanding a trade, or, you know, demanding more respect, figuring that he's kind of a realist, saying, look, I know I haven't been on the field half the time. Mm-hmm. I understand you have to strengthen the position for the sake of the team. I get that vibe from Jimmy, but at the same time, this is two consecutive off seasons where they've gone looking for your replacement. Last year was Tom Brady, and now they're bringing in a rookie that they're not going to ask him to mentor, but they're going to want this rookie ready to go in case Jimmy can't. So it's fascinating.
Could you see Jimmy having success this season?
Oh, absolutely. And then, so you get back to your point of, if he wins a Super Bowl, then what? Okay. In the Bay Area, in the 49ers land, it's all about the Super Bowl. If he wins, that erases the whatever mistakes that they made in the fourth quarter a couple of years earlier. His stock is skyrocketed. Everybody's going to want Jimmy Garoppolo again. He's going to have everybody charmed with the feels great baby. Nobody's going to want to get rid of him. And then you're going to be in a situation where, well, we have enough cap space where we can carry Jimmy another year and the rookie, because Jimmy's still under contract. You could ride it out for another year financially, emotionally. And it's just, how long can you go with a number three overall?
And you need to get him in. I mean, it's the Jordan Love situation, right? Where you need to see him play by a certain time, so you really have enough to know whether or not you could pick up his option. You need to get him on the field. Plus, yeah, then there's that whole thing about the three number ones that you actually spent on the
stadium. Yeah, well, it's okay. They blew number ones with Solomon Thomas and Reuben Foster, so nobody was going to...
Not three.
There's no Garrett.
Not three. See, that's the thing about this quarterback that I am the most... Like, they have to love one. I am not buying the whole Peter King thing that they don't know and they just moved up and they're going to make a decision moving forward. I think they have to know who they... Even if it was just the number three overall pick, in order to pull the trigger for a quarterback there, you have to love them. You don't just take one because that's who came to you. But if you're going to use three first-round picks for a quarterback, they have to think this is the guy that they can build a franchise around, not just like, oh, well, I hope.
Yeah. The other thing just to keep in mind is the whole spectrum of a quarterback change or an imminent one, that's going to be a distraction no matter what. By saying whoever you're getting, whoever that one is, Lindsay, and I totally agree with you, whoever that one is, they are trying to, you know, stop any controversy now, say, no, he's not, we're not putting him in right away. Hmm. I mean, look, the 49ers are the one,
yeah, the 49ers, take it off the table.
They set the bar for quarterback controversies by bringing Steve Young in 87 to back up Joe Montana, right? The Colin Kaepernick, Alex Smith transition in 2012 wasn't nearly as heated, but around the Bay Area, it certainly was, because Alex had battled through so many low times. And then just when they were getting good and he was playing at his peak, he gets concussed and Kaepernick replaces him. And then Alex goes to KC, which is where the model is basically that the 49ers are trying to follow. They're trying to follow the Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes success that the Chiefs showed.
So what do you think is next here? What's the next clue that you were looking for?
I'd be curious to know which of these three quarterbacks they're doing even more and more background on. right? Because that's something that Shanahan said was, it's hard in this, no combine and no visits to really get to know the guy. So they have to do all these extra background vices. Like, so whoever's assistant high school football coach is getting called, or third grade math teacher, that might be a signal that that's the guy. But I mean, so I guess we got some work to do the next few weeks to call some people up in all their states. Was it Mac Jones is from, I think, Jacksonville. Trey Lance is from Georgia. Or no, where's Trey Lance from? But I know that Justin Field is from Georgia, and Trey Lance is from Minnesota, I believe. So you got contacts here. I can call my neighbor over, neighbor Dave.
Yeah, exactly. Your neighbor, neighbor knows some people at North Dakota State, it sounds like. I look forward to reading your write-ups about their sixth grade PE teachers and, you know, what we know about them.
Well, don't knock the teachers. They are awesome, right? They're like the heroes to all this too. So it's good.
They sure are. I'd like them to take my children and take the job out of my hands completely. But that's another podcast. Cam Inman, thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
My pleasure, Lindsay. It was so nice talking to you. And anytime there's crazy 49er talk, just feel free to hit me up again, which is probably in a month, and then another year, and then another year.
Exactly. Awesome. Once we know who the pick is, then we'll meet back again to talk about all the reasons it was probably the wrong pick.
The pick is in, and Kyle Shanahan is on the clock.
Love it.
All right. Well, good deal. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Cam. I really appreciate it. So that's how things look for the Niners post-Dolphins trade. What about Miami? What do their moves on Friday mean for them? We'll be back with Safed Dean from the Sun Sentinel after this. Back now with Safed Dean from the Sun Sentinel, Dolphins beat writer. How many years have you covered the team?
This is 3 going on 4. So exciting to see what Brian Flores, Tua Tagovailoa, everything that's happening here in Miami. It's a real, real exciting time, that's for sure.
It's a lot. They're keeping you busy. You recovered from Friday yet? All of those moving parts coming at you fast.
I'm kind of mad at the Dolphins. I was getting ready to go to the beach, enjoy my Friday here. And then they just took over the whole NFL cycle with 2 trades on Friday. So the Dolphins owe me a beach day, that's for sure.
Yeah, Safed, I don't think very many people are feeling all too sorry for you living down there in Miami, missing out on the beach day. There will be more.
I'm sorry for rubbing it in, everybody. So sorry.
It has been kind of a rough decade down there for Dolphins fans. So I would imagine that this move is going over fairly well down there. Chris Greer working the board somewhat masterfully.
I would say 2 decades, honestly. It's been a long time.
There was like one year where they, you know, did pretty well. I kind of gave that to them.
But there were a couple playoff bursts there, but it's been a long time coming since, you know, Dan Marino retired here in South Florida for a Dolphins fan. It's been, you know, 2 decades of frustrating football. And so Tua Tagovailoa, the 5th pick in the 2020 draft, was supposed to be, you know, the next coming or the next best quarterback for the Dolphins here. And the rocky rookie season, I wouldn't even say rocky. I think rocky is a little unfair to, Tua. He played pretty well, was 6-3, 9 games. Showed signs of being a rookie, which is fine. And he's coming back from the hip injury too. So I'm excited for him in year 2, what he's going to do for this Dolphins franchise. And the moves the Dolphins have made have definitely shown that they are invested in him, you know, at least for a little bit longer than the short term here coming up.
Okay, let's talk about that before we get into what they do now because of the moves that they've made, because this does indicate that they are all in on Tua for at least one more year, because then they've set themselves up to maybe make a move for a quarterback in the next couple of years if this doesn't work out. But there were some people who saw Tua play this year who were less than, let's say they were underwhelmed, right? Like it went fine. But especially since you moved away from Ryan Fitzpatrick, and it felt like the offense was actually more explosive and clicked more when Ryan Fitzpatrick was under center. What makes you say that he's the right guy and that they feel like they're on the right path with him? Why would they go all in on Tua?
Yeah, well, first of all, they kind of have to. When you don't spend a 5th pick on a quarterback like Tua Tagovailoa, if you're not going to be all in on him. And I think more importantly, too, we heard all the Deshaun Watson rumors all the beginning of this year, since January, of him wanting out of Houston. And, you know, unfortunately for him and unfortunately for the people involved in his situation going forward, you know, the lawsuits, the sexual misconduct allegations, upwards of reaching almost 20 now, and who knows how many more can be. All of that situation really put a damper on his trade value, when he'll be traded. I don't expect any of that to be resolved anytime before the draft next month. And I think the Dolphins saw that as well, too. And so Chris Greer and Brian Flores, they decided, hey, let's take our picks. Let's try to make some moves. Let's try to get some assets along the way for the future as well. And you saw them move from 3 to 12, then back up to 6. Unfortunately, you know, it was a great move with San Fran to get 2 draft picks, 2 first-round picks from them. And the Dolphins had to pay one of those picks to go move back up to 6 for the Eagles. But I think I applaud the Dolphins for the move, because they, at number 6, get to pick whichever player they want. And yeah, they may not have been afforded that opportunity at number 12. And I think that's probably the biggest thing here, along with them investing in Tua for the future.
The assumption being that the first 4 guys off the board will probably be quarterbacks, and then the Bengals, we all expect, will go offensive line. And so now you're sitting at 6 with essentially the same group of options that you had at number 3 that you were interested in terms of pass catchers. Where do you think they go at that position?
You know, there was a report out that we saw here on Monday that said that Joe Burrow is trying to reunite with Ja'Marr Chase with that number 5 pick. So if they get, the Bengals get Ja'Marr Chase at number 5, you take out.
Why would Joe Burrow, of all people, be like, don't protect me? Like, he needs protection. Joe, no. Well,
did you see what they did at LSU in 2019? I think Joe Burrow remembers. I think Ja'Marr Chase remembers. And I think if you get him somebody to throw the football to in a matter of 3 seconds or less, then I don't think Joe Burrow minds taking a couple of hits if he can throw it to Ja'Marr Chase. I kind of like that move for them, honestly. I mean, Penei Sewell is obviously, you know, arguably the best left tackle in the draft. It would make plenty of sense for Cincinnati to go get them. But if you get a run-of-the-mill offensive lineman and you have a star wide receiver for Joe Burrow to throw to, I think Joe Burrow would kind of prefer that a little bit more. Then some protection that he could probably get from somebody else. That's too valuable of a pick. But, you know, okay,
so maybe Ja'Marr Chase then goes at 5, right? Which still leaves the Dolphins with an awful lot of choices there. Which one do you think makes the most sense? Because you've got Ja'Marr Chase, you've got Jalen Waddle, you've got Devontae Smith, you have Kyle Pitts, the tight end. It feels like there are a lot of different, you know, playmakers who are all kind of different stylistically. So I'm curious about, now that they're building an offense around Tua, right, to play to his strengths, what exactly does that mean? What kind of weapon is that?
Yeah, for Tua Tagovailoa, I can easily see any of these 3 players really working out for them, whether it's Jalen Waddle or Devontae Smith from Alabama, because he played with them in college, or even Florida's Kyle Pitts. Somebody, a personal favorite of mine, I'm a Florida Gator, so maybe I have some bias there. But those are 3 of the best pass catchers behind Ja'Marr Chase. You know, Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle all played with Tua Tagovailoa 3 years at Alabama. Not only did they play on the field, but they spent all that time off the field together too. That familiarity could work wonders for Tua Tagovailoa here in Miami. As we saw, it worked for him in Alabama. That probably leads to a little bit of some of the struggles that Tua had during his rookie season too. He wasn't as familiar with these guys that he was throwing to. Some guys also got hurt as well. So I could definitely see the Dolphins getting a player that Tua has already played with, like Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle. But Kyle Pitts is just a whole other animal in its own. 6'4", a great passing target, guy who can catch everything in the end zone, can, you know, leave DBs in his dust and leave linebackers in the dust the same way too. So I'm interested to see what the Dolphins do here. Obviously, this is a pick that they decided was worth 2 first-round picks because you gave away one of the San Fran picks to pick. So if it's Kyle Pitts, if you think he's worth 2 first-round picks, or you think Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle are worth 2 first-round picks, I sure hope they are, because it's a big pick for the Dolphins here. They have to build around Tua Tagovailoa and give him a passing target. I think one of those 3 guys will do a great job doing so.
Does Kyle Pitts make sense considering you have Mike Gesicki and obviously the position itself? I'm not saying Mike Gesicki is like the best tight end in the NFL, but it's not a hole really, right? And they need a playmaker at wide receiver. You could argue that the way that tight ends are used now, that could be your best playmaker, period. I mean, in the case of like Kelce, you've got lots of options out there at tight end where you could point to that argument. Maybe a 2 tight also package would be nice as well. But what do you think makes the most sense if you had to just call it and say, because my guess is if they move back up from 12 to 6, My thought is that there was one specific one that they think, not that you necessarily know who that is, but that they think is the best option for them. Or else if they stay at 12, one of those might fall to them, right? Probably would.
Yeah, I think if they stayed at 12, well, first of all, we would all be wondering why they slipped all the way from 3 to 12. You know, why didn't they go and try to just take the player that they wanted? And who knows who's left over at that point? The Giants at 11 seem to like they'll take a running, take a wide receiver. Some other teams in that mix too, maybe if they don't go defender, take a receiver too. So the Dolphins are kind of left not getting the choice of who they really wanted. And I think if you're going to pay two first round picks, for me, I think it's Kyle Pitts, honestly. I think a lot of people have rated him as a future Hall of Famer, you know, in this draft class, which is too much of an expectation for a rookie, a guy who's never played an NFL snap yet. But if you're confident in his talent and you feel like that's worth paying for with the two first round picks, you take him at 6. The familiarity helps Tua Tagovailoa with Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith. But Kyle Pitts, who cares if you have Mike Gesicki? Who cares if you have two tight ends? You're not getting Kyle Pitts to come and block for your running game, even though Brian Flores wants to run the ball and pound the football. You're getting a player for Tua Tagovailoa to throw the football to. And if Kyle Pitts is lining up at tight end, wide receiver, in the slot, doesn't matter where you put him on the field, he's going to catch any pass that you throw his way. And that's why I would pick Kyle Pitts if I were the Dolphins at number 6.
If you get Kyle Pitts, do you keep Gesicki and build around both of them, or do you potentially package him and get some value back? There are a lot of teams that could use a tight end like him.
Yeah, Gesicki is an interesting, you know, case study for the Dolphins too, because I think he has a year left on his rookie deal, if not two. The Dolphins aren't really too prone to re-signing guys off after their rookie deals, although Gesicki would be a nice pick if they take a receiver. But if you get Kyle Pitts and you get Gesicki, you could either let Gesicki walk or resign him and keep him. I mean, the Dolphins in 2019 under Brian Flores, the first year, they kind of moved Gesicki off the tight end and into a slot position to be a little bit more of a glorified receiver. If you want him to stick to that same role on offense, it's worth keeping him. But I think the players on the Dolphins roster right now, they have probably a 1 to 2 year shelf life here. The Dolphins are making moves for the future, not so much really for the present. So I see guys like Devontae Parker, even Preston Williams, Shakeem Grant. Guys are on the team right now or on the team last season. I definitely see some of those players not really lasting here more than a year or two after this. So the players that you get in the draft right now are going to be the ones that you build a future on.
There are some people that think that they should have stayed at 12, that they shouldn't have actually given up that extra first round pick that they had in 2022. To go back up to 6. What's your take on that?
You didn't want to miss out on one of the top 4 guys, whether it's Chase, Smith, Waddle, or Pitts. And I think one of those guys probably would have been there at 12 only because you have guys like Minka Parsons out of Penn State, Caleb Farley, the cornerback from Tech, I believe. Patrick Surtain is in the mix there to be a top 10 pick as well. Penei Sewell, somebody's going to get him, or somebody's going to take the left tackle from Northwestern. There's a bunch of guys in that mix that probably would have filled out the top 10, that one of the receivers would have lasted that 12 to you if you're Miami. But, you know, I applaud the move. I think if the Dolphins really want to go get somebody, they should go get them. And that's been probably one thing that hasn't happened down here with the Dolphins, you know, filling up the roster, paying premium prices for a premium player. The Dolphins need a premium receiving target, and that's what they can get with this number 6 pick.
Did they leave themselves enough ammunition to possibly move up next year to get a quarterback if Tua doesn't pan out the way that they're hoping that he will this year?
I don't know if they have enough. I think when you first think of them trading with San Francisco and getting two future first-round picks, to me, the first thing that signaled is if Deshaun Watson's legal situations become resolved in the next year, you have two first-round picks to trade towards Houston. But giving up one of those picks, you know, it definitely leaves a little bit less in the tank. Maybe somebody's interested in that 23 pick, but that's two drafts from now after the 21 draft that we're going to have next month. So we'll see. They're going to be either all in on Tua, or the first round pick that they have next year is going to be the pick that they have to make. Or maybe they give Tua 2 more years. We'll see. But look, Tua Tagovailoa is a young quarterback. Last year was, you know, a year removed from him having a gruesome hip injury. We saw him, you know, broke his nose, needed help off the field, was in an incredible amount of pain. And for him to come back to 100%, to play 9 games last season, to get his feet wet in the NFL, set the foundation for an offseason he's going through now where he's working out 4 or 5 times a week, you know, whether it's strength training, football training. He's really going hard this offseason with hopes to make a bigger jump in his second year. And if he does that, the Dolphins seem to be in pretty good shape with him after drafting him.
What is the expectation there with regard to what that jump will look like? In what way will Tua be a different quarterback in year two than he was in year one?
Yeah, you're hoping obviously for him to feel a little bit more secure in the hip. Not to say that he didn't feel like that at times during his rookie season, but I'm sure it was lingering, kind of sync up a little bit more. There's probably some times where Tua wanted to make some moves that he's used to making or things we saw from him at Alabama, and maybe the hip didn't catch all the way up to him. But also what you're hoping 2 years after this is for him to be a little bit more comfortable with the receiving targets he has, with him to be a little bit more comfortable playing in the NFL and reading defenses and not being scared to throw the football downfield. And then you're hoping with the Dolphins, they have two, you know, a co-offensive coordinator situation going on here. You're hoping this new offense kind of leads to into doing the things that are best for him, whether it's, you know, finding guys downfield or for him to throw graceful passes that he did at Alabama that went for big scores. You're looking for Tua to have some more chemistry here on offense and the Dolphins to be a little bit more explosive on offense moving forward.
You've mentioned Watson a couple of times and that not being an option for Miami under the circumstances. What was your understanding about their interest in Watson prior to all of these allegations becoming public?
Look, the Dolphins couldn't be really outspoken in their options because they had Tua Tagovailoa. You know, imagine the Dolphins, Brian Flores, Chris Greer, you're trying to build a program here. You're trying to start from scratch. You're trying to get everybody to buy into your program here. Brian Flores seemed to make that happen after his first season. They went 5-11, but it seemed like the tide turned really dramatically for them last season. And we saw them come out with 10 wins. They were one game short of the playoff. But everything that you're trying to build, a family and a culture, all those things kind of go out the window if you're willing to part ways with Tua Tagovailoa after one season. That's not to discredit him as a player, although some people may have seen his play and felt underwhelmed, like you mentioned earlier. But Deshaun Watson was a proven top five quarterback, maybe even top two behind Patrick Mahomes. Led his team to an AFC title game, I believe, or really deep in the playoffs in 2019. It's okay to want Deshaun Watson as a player if you had Tua Tagovailoa. I felt the Dolphins felt like that. I felt Dolphin fans, some of them felt like that as well too. But it doesn't really do the Dolphins any good if they express their interest in Watson outwardly when you have Tua Tagovailoa after one season and the rocky year that you may have thought he had. So there was some interest there. And with their draft capital and the picks that they had, the number three pick and, you know, some other ammunition that they had there, they did have one of the best trade packages they could have offered Houston. But his allegations definitely put a damper on all of those situations for the Dolphins and for him himself.
Was there ever any interest in trying to go get Wilson?
I'm not sure if there was much interest, but I think when you have any of the top five quarterbacks available, you definitely want to figure out if you have a trade package that'll be there for you or put you a player, make you a player, you know, for these trades. Russell Wilson, I believe he's what, 7, 8 years in the league now. Deshaun Watson is just coming off his fourth season. So, and Tua Tagovailoa is a rookie who hopes to get where those quarterbacks are as a player when you have some years of development there too. So, interest, I believe there probably was anytime if you're trying to look for an upgrade too, but the Dolphins are standing pat with Tua Tagovailoa. They're going to let him develop. They're going to build around him and they're hoping that he can lead them into, you know, a more prosperous future.
Well, they've got the draft capital to build this team very nicely. 5 picks in the top 100, 2 in the first round, the 6th overall pick, as we've talked about, and then the 18th overall pick. No one's talking about that, at least nationally, because everyone's so focused on the 6, but 18, they get to add another piece. What direction do you think they go in there?
You know, a little bit of draft, NFL draft, mock draft wisdom would say they'd probably go edge rusher there. The Dolphins have a really, really big need at edge rusher. You know, they got rid of Kava Inouye after 1 year, traded away Shaq Lawson for a linebacker. You know, they have needed a defensive end really badly, especially after Cameron Wake went to Tennessee a couple seasons ago. But I don't know. For me, if I'm the Dolphins, I'm looking at Najee Harris at number 18. I'm hoping the Cardinals at 16 don't take him. I think if the Cardinals take him take Najee Harris at 16, it completes their offense with the pieces that they added and with Kyler Murray. If he's there at 18, the Dolphins, I try to take him. I think one of these edge rushers in that group of teens, whether it's a Georgia kid, Notre Dame kid, Michigan kid, Quiddy Page, some Miami kids. You know, there's a bunch of edge rushers, front seven guys in the teen range that are going to go. But those are going to not be day one impact guys. You know, those are going to be guys that you need to develop. And I think Najee Harris is a home run hitter as soon as he steps on a field. So Dolphins should take him at 18. That's my opinion. I think Buffalo or Pittsburgh might be interested if you don't take him at 18. I don't think he lasts in the second round. And if I'm the Dolphins, I try to set my offense up for the next couple of years with one of those receivers, whether it's Kyle Pitts, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, and I take Najee Harris as well.
You mentioned Kyle Van Noy, who they cut for financial reasons, was not happy about that move, seemingly. Mm-hmm. What was up with that no comment comment when he was asked about the difference between Flores as a head coach and Flores as a linebacker coach, which of course is what he was to him when he was in New England before?
Yeah, it doesn't help Kyle Van Noy out either way. I mean, if he comments or doesn't comment, and even we saw no comment is saying a lot without saying much at all.
No comment usually means I don't have anything nice to say. Like, so yeah. the because I saw that he went on Pat McAfee and was like, oh, I couldn't win, you know, so I just said no comment. Mm-hmm. Well, saying no comment, like, it means I have nothing nice to say, so I'm not going to say anything at all. That's how all of us read it. So,
oh yeah,
I don't know. I didn't totally understand the, like, I couldn't win. What I read that as is that he's upset with Brian Flores for cutting him and thinking that he was an expendable piece and not, like, the guy that he wanted to build around defensively. And so he didn't want to say anything because he was upset.
I can definitely see that. You know, Kyle Van Noy doesn't hide his emotions. He wears them on his sleeve for sure. He's not afraid to express himself unless it's a no comment, I guess. But look, Brian Flores was his defensive coach in New England. They won games together. They won Super Bowls together. Kyle Van Noy signed a four-year deal worth $51 million last offseason. $15 million he got last season. And after paying $15 million, Brian Flores and Chris Greer decided to part ways with Kyle Van Noy.
There wasn't a bad relationship there, right? Between he and Brian Flores. They did not see eye to eye, did they?
No, I don't think so. And I think maybe Kyle Van Noy probably wasn't the most, you know, beloved teammate. I think maybe some of the leadership qualities and winning experience, maybe that'd be a little bit overblown for some of the Dolphins players on the team.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
I think, you know, when you hear of a player, Kyle Van Noy, you think of, you know, two-time Super Bowl champion, experience, leader in the locker room, things like that nature. And sometimes those things can be overblown. Sometimes it's what we know or what we say about a player because that's what we know, but we don't know what's going on behind the scenes in the locker room, if he's really beloved by his teammates or things like that. But also, if you think about it just from the Dolphins' money perspective, they saved about $10 million, $9 to $10 million just by cutting him. You don't have to pay him the rest of the contract after paying $15 million the first season. And more importantly, they took that $10 million and signed Will Fuller, a receiver that they needed. So, you know, purely, you know, business move here by the Dolphins. And I thought, you know, if Kyle Van Noy wasn't a player or a star player, there was no need for the Dolphins to kind of wait out that whole contract. They parted ways with him, cut ties with him. It's a business. It's a ruthless business at times. Kyle Van Noy got his feelings hurt. But, you know, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is.
I do like the Will Fuller move. I mean, I know some people aren't all in on it because of his lack of ability to stay on the field and he's got that suspension looming, but I think he adds something really nice to that offense that has been lacking, assuming that you're going to go add another pass-catching option. Also, with that sixth pick, I think that that could package pretty nicely together. Miami's defense was obviously the strength of this team last year, kind of carried them, especially when Tua was under center. What are our expectations with regard to what they'll look like this year? Does that carry over? Are the pieces back?
I think there's a little bit of a step back for the Dolphins defense. You know, at one point last year, they were number one defense in the league. They finished sixth in that category. Xavien Howard led the league with 10 interceptions. And the Dolphins, I believe, led the NFL with interceptions or at least turnovers in that matter. But, you know, the game of football, turnovers are a real lucky thing.
Yeah.
You have to be right there, right place, right time, especially with fumbles, turnovers, you know, you name it. Those things are just a draw of the luck. And sometimes teams either get that luck to be renewed or they're not as lucky the next time around. So with the Dolphins defense, I expect a little bit of a step back just because they need to fill an edge rusher role. You're missing Kyle Van Noy, you're missing Shaq Lawson, although you still have Emmanuel Ogba, who led them in sacks last year. Jerome Baker's a really, really exciting linebacker in the NFL, a guy that the Dolphins definitely should extend or re-sign when his contract is up. And then you have Xavien Howard and Byron Jones out manning the outside there. One of the best cornerback tandems in the league. So with that foundation, I think Brian Flores and his scheme can definitely still be a top 10 defense. I'm not sure if they're going to get back to number one or have the turnovers to be as great as they were last year, but the Dolphins definitely have the pieces in place for a good defense.
Last question about the roster. I know we talked a little bit about running back earlier, Najee Harris, but that position feels like one that they have to address, right? In the draft, this has kind of been a gaping hole. I know some people don't really like using draft capital for running backs and the value return on that, but they have to go in that direction, right? At some point.
Well, the Dolphins running back hole is, this has been a 2-year hole they've tried to fill. Everybody knew they needed running back in the 2020 draft. And unfortunately for them, in the second round, a string of guys went off the board and they were unable to get one. Right before they picked up a defensive tackle, Raekwon Davis, J.K. Dobbins was a pick by the Ravens at 35. That seemed like a shoo-in fit right there. And a couple other guys, it was a string of guys. I think five of them went in the second round last year. The Dolphins didn't get one. So they signed Jordan Howard before that. They went and traded for Matt Breida, and those two guys didn't work out here at all. So, yes, the hole, it's even a little bit more glaring this time around for them. That's why I think they should go get Najee Harris at 18. I know teams don't like to draft running backs in the first round. Go get a player who you think is going to be a game changer. But more importantly, too, I think the top heavy part of this draft in regards to running backs behind Harris, it's Travis Etienne from Clemson, and then Javonte Williams from North Carolina. And some people I've spoken to actually believe Williams is better than both of them. So the Dolphins have some options. If they don't pick anything up at 18, they have to pick one up at 36. But yes, running back is a major hole. And that's a player that the Dolphins need, especially because they have Tua Tagovailoa. They want to do some RPO stuff. You need a running game. You need a threat in the backfield. They have to fill that hole if Tua is going to take the next step he needs to take in his second season.
All right, last question.
Hold on, you said that was the last question.
I know. Last question about their roster, I was very specific. There was a clarification there at the end. My last question to you, period. The statue that we're going to build down there in Miami, is it going to be of Chris Greer, or is it going to be of Laremy Tunsil?
It has to be of Laremy Tunsil, right? I mean, this guy, the Dolphins got so lucky. This is such a crazy tale. And especially when you think of Laremy Tunsil, what he went through on draft day, where the picture leaked of him with the gas mask bong on. And, you know, it plummeled his draft stock. He was supposed to be a top three pick that year, lasted all the way to 13. I think the Dolphins had the number 8 pick that year, and they traded back to 13, took him. He played 3-4 really good seasons here, was almost a franchise left tackle, left for Houston, became one of the highest paid left tackles in the league. And the Dolphins got 2 first round picks, 2 second round picks from Houston in that deal in 2019. Then they just traded this number 3 pick for the 2 first-round picks and a second-round pick, too. So all in all, Laremy Tunsil got 4 first-round picks, 2 seconds, 1/3. He deserves his name in the ring of honor and his trophy and a statue in front of the stadium, because he's going to be the reason why Chris Greer and the Dolphins have this rebuild coming up. They really need to pay homage to him, for sure.
Oh, my gosh. Well, at least he's enjoying it. I've seen that he's responding to some of this on social media and enjoying all the attention that he's getting. Somewhat indirectly. Okay, I lied. I have one more question. Okay. Could you see a scenario where they would trade back again from 6?
Trade back from 6. Well, you have to get another first round pick, and you're hoping to see. Maybe you can get that.
But they already had one.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so they already gave up a first round pick, so you would think it would have to even be more than that. I'm just wondering if there's a scenario that somebody offers a lot because they're desperate to come up and get a quarterback. Right? Because there's so many teams that are just desperate for someone, I think.
I think if the Denver Broncos want to jump ahead of Carolina, they call it the Dolphins, especially if Jamar Chase is off the board at 5 there. But who are the first 3-4 picks going to be? Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields,
maybe
or Trey Lance.
Maybe Mac Jones.
I think Atlanta, as much as Kyle Pitts would be amazing in that offense, I think Atlanta needs to get a quarterback, especially they're being so high up in the draft.
Yeah.
But Carolina needs one. Denver needs one. The Patriots need one. I don't see the Dolphins.
Washington might go make a move for one.
Yeah. If a team has some future picks to give up, the Dolphins will be willing to listen and give up for number 6. But I don't know how far back the Dolphins are willing to go. I think 8, 9. They got back into the top 10 for a reason. And Depending on how far down the draft is, I'm not sure if the deal gets done. But the phone's always open. Chris Greer's not afraid to make deals.
Obviously.
Yes, obviously.
I love it. I love the aggressive maneuvering. That's my kind of general manager. Okay, no more questions. Now you're off the hook. I did not lie that last time. Stafford Dean from the Sun Sentinel, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
No, Lindsay, thank you so much. I had a really great time with you on this.
And you can find Stafford on Twitter for more Dolphins news at Stafford_Dean. And that's S-A-F-I-D, Dean with two E's. And we will be back on Friday with more tea leaf reading, trying to figure out how this whole draft thing's going to go down. 1 month from now in Cleveland, what are the Panthers going to do? Maybe we'll look into that because they're looking like they might get stuck without a chair when the music stops at this point. They've got to have a plan, right? Anyway, have a good week. We'll see you Friday.